I dream of it sometimes, of Renly's dying, a green tent, candles, a woman screaming, and blood. I was still abed when he died. Your Devon will tell you. He tried to wake me. Dawn was nigh, my lords were waiting, fretting. I should have been a horse, armored. I knew Renly would attack at break of day. Devon says I thrashed and cried out, but what does it matter? It was a dream. I was in my tent when Renly died, and when I woke, my hands were clean.
Hello and welcome to Two Champs and a Chomp, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by Will Lentz, myself, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Major props go out to FFG for putting out a great game, George R. R. Martin for an amazing product, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward to the Creative Commons licensed music you hear today. Welcome to Season 3.
Sounds like a cover story.
It does. I'm pretty sure Stannis murdered him.
Yeah. On the other hand, what if the gloves don't fit?
Then you must acquit.
I think his hand reference meant that gloves wouldn't fit.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess he's innocent.
Yeah.
If OJ taught me anything, it's you can murder your wife.
Holy shit.
And get away with it.
Too soon, man. Too soon.
Too soon. Hasn't that been like 15 years now or something?
Been a while.
Too soon, bro.
I want to say mid-90s.
Yeah. Maybe longer. In my mind, 10 years ago was still like 1995.
That was not 10 years ago, William.
It's a little awkward.
Very warped sense of time, I guess.
Yes. Yes, I do have a very warped sense of time.
Well, welcome to Two Champs, One Chump. My name is Brett Zeiler.
Will Lentz.
Daryl Lloyd.
And we'll be your guides through this evening's sultry and sensual trip down Word Street. That one got away from me a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
So. We have a spoiler this week.
Spoiler, Doctor Who coming to Game of Thrones. Hint, he's a Shadows card.
I don't think it's going to happen, William.
No,
probably not.
Not happening.
But no, the spoiler that was at least hyped by me earlier in the week, I made a Facebook post about it. It's a big one. One of my favorite cards from the set.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. Or, well, it's pretty big ability. You might argue the card itself is kind of small.
You could. Well, I'm going to read it.
Okay, go right ahead, since it's one of your favorite cards.
Yes. It is a new Tommen Baratheon. He's a one-cost, one-strength, unique Lannister character with a power icon.
Go figure.
So, pretty standard Tommen fare. Whoa. He's a king and a lord. Again, keeping it pretty regular. He is House Lannister only, and he has the text, any phase. If it is summer, kneel to Baratheon. Look at the top four cards of your deck. Switch any one of those cards with a card in your hand, if able. Then put the remaining cards on top of your deck in any order.
Say what?
Boom.
Bam.
The top four cards of your deck are now a part of your hand.
Pretty cool.
Pretty darn close.
That's sweet. Yeah. And plus they're reorganized. So you're drawing exactly what you want.
Yeah, you know what you're drawing next turn.
Yep.
Pretty much for sure.
It's pretty awesome.
I mean,
I absolutely love this card.
It is phenomenal. Dig and filtering mm-hmm. together.
Yeah. And with, I don't know, just the first card I can think of off the top of my head that would come in handy with that ability. No, never mind. That doesn't work. Doesn't work the way I thought it would. Well, not as good. It doesn't work the same. But I was going to say Pyromancer's Cash, which is still a great card. But, I mean, that's fine. For some reason, I was thinking, oh, you put the card on top of your deck. I don't know what I'm thinking. I'm sorry.
Well, it still kind of works out for two reasons. Pyromancer's Cache wants a king, which this Toman does indeed do, and Cache then would draw you the top two cards, right? But Toman lets you rearrange the top four. So say there are, you know, cards that you want that are further down, you can grab one immediate card with his ability, and then put the other stuff that you want quickly on top, then draw them with the Cache immediately after.
And, well, I think you're ignoring maybe the most important thing when you're looking at any, as far as the actual card goes, because it does need to be Summer, and we have this new Summer agenda coming out in this pack that increases your draw cap by one.
Right.
Therefore, when you have two Pyromancer's Caches in play, you can still trigger both of them because it's going to be Summer anyway, and you're using Toman.
Both
because there's not much that makes me more depressed than having two Caches in play and a King and not being able to use the full four cards.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is pretty awesome. Though it's worth pointing out also that Toman himself is not a draw card. Not this version, anyway.
That's true.
So with the new agenda, there's kind of pluses and minuses there. Like, I feel like you want to have a critical mass of draw at some whatever that point is to be able to take advantage of your increased draw cap. But Toman does not help with that, unfortunately.
He does not, but I think, I mean, even if you're just running the standard Lannister extra draw fare in Golden Tooth Mines and Pyromancer's Caches, I think you'll be pretty set.
It's debatable whether, you know, the Caches are standard, I think.
I mean, if you're going for draw, like specifically looking for Lannister draw, then I feel like Caches are.
Ah, okay. Makes me wonder if some of the kind of side draw is going to see some more play.
Some Insidious Ways action?
Yeah, if we'll see people start drifting back toward Doubting Septas again, you know, since you'll have that kind of extra cushion and they're less likely to be, if you'll pardon the pun, dead cards.
That's fun.
No, yeah, that you know, fun. I do try. So you think this will skew the Lanny restricted card choice in general? I don't know, it's hard to say too much about Summer. Do we know enough yet to make it enticing for Lannister?
I don't know. I think Toman's a pretty big shot in the arm for Lannister Summer. His ability, it's not jaw-dropping when you first look at it, when you think about it. I am just floored by this. And Will, wasn't there a Sam on the CCG that had a similar effect?
Yes. It was, if I recall, basically exactly the same, only it didn't need to be Summer. Okay. Granted, he also was neutral and had no icons, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
But still.
Yeah, I knew there was one that was a similar effect.
Never made challenges anyway.
Yeah, I just didn't remember the specifics about him.
Yeah.
No, and then also, I do want to point out for anyone, since we haven't mentioned it yet, and I was thinking about this earlier in the day, this is another King Toman, but he is not turned off by other kings, and he will turn off other kings that are affected by that such.
Yeah.
So I always dig kings that get to do their thing no matter what, all the Robb Stark or Mance Raiders.
So now we've got, what, three kings that just don't give a fuck?
Robb, Mance, both Mances, I guess I should say, and then the Standing Robert.
The Honey Badger Kings.
Mm-hmm.
The Honey Badger Kings. Actually, I'm pretty cool with that being a thing.
That actually sounds like a great name for a band or something.
Honey Badger Roberts?
You're welcome.
No, Honey Badger Kings.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Or at least somebody needs to make a deck out of that.
Yes, no, assuming that Lannister does get some more summer tech, or there's just more summer tech in general for neutral stuff in this pack, I could see Lanny Summer being a thing, just powered by all the Lanny draw plus Toman. You're getting your four cards a turn.
I mean, and granted, there's probably going to be other cards coming out, I would imagine, that would kick off of it being Summer. So, you know.
Yeah, probably.
It's probably going to be pretty good,
though.
I would imagine.
You know, though they can only fit so many in there, and there's not many Lanny cards that do anything with Summer right now.
Yeah.
You know, the stuff that they'd had in the previous season cycle was kind of either or. They were supposed to be one of the houses that could kind of go either way.
Yeah. Like Daryl.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think what's really going to impact that, I mean, as simple as it sounds, is going to be how good Winter is, you know? So, I mean, Winter already has, there's already awesome cards that will kick off of it being Winter. So, yeah. It's really going to be a matter of, are the summer cards that are going to come out going to be, you know, just as good as those Winter cards? And I don't know.
There's going to have to be some really amazing summer Laney cards to back Toman up. Because I really don't think he's worth it on his own. There's going to need to be some more neutral stuff. Because the Laney cards that have summer in the text box, which is the search I just ran, the old ones are River Bandit, which actually needs it to be neither summer nor winter. Mm-hmm. Summer Tax, which I did actually dig for a long time, back when these were new cards, but that was just because, everyone else was playing Winter, and so I like to put it on my own house card to draw a free card and essentially claim a power, which was pretty decent when it was almost assured that you were gonna get it. On the flip side, it being summer, I'm not sure that's enough. And then Tax Dry, which in my summer deck then could double not double my income. That was poor wording on my part. But lets me count an opponent's income as well.
Yes. Which, I mean, I do actually dig that card with Knights of the Hollow Hill being fairly popular.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. Then you get plus two gold for the one cost, but it's an attachment, and it's not set up, it's a condition, I don't know. Those just really don't seem all that worth it to me. Though, looking back at the neutral stuff that mentions summer, there is one that'll be pretty rockin' along with Toman.
Okay.
Any guesses what that is? Nobody? Okay. The Inn of the Kneeling Man.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's pretty fierce.
Yeah.
Especially if you have some more draw to supplement in between Toman triggers.
Yeah, exactly. If you have the ability to say trigger Toman once, stand in with the Kneeling Man, and then use cash so that you're digging two more deeper with the next Toman activation, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I mean, heck, you can even do it, you know, Toman and the plot phase, and then do your regular draw, and then Toman again.
Yep.
Even if you don't have any other like cards of your own that draw.
Yeah, there's several pretty sweet options there.
Yeah. And keep in mind that this pack will also have the new Green Dreams that will be able to tutor out Toman or other potentially decent summer cards.
The End of the Kneeling Man.
The End of the Kneeling Man, for example.
Yeah. So, I mean, hopefully there are several more summer cards, but that's really the best thing that I'm seeing right now, is Toman plus Inn of the Kneeling Man. And even that, as awesome as it sounds, really doesn't feel like enough to swing a whole agenda slot to me.
I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we'll just have to see how much there is.
Yeah. I have high hopes. I mean, I could be really disappointed. That is absolutely possible. I really hope I'm not disappointed.
Yeah. It's just tricky, you know? Toman looks so awesome, but so much of it depends on what else we see along with
other summer cards.
Yep.
It's exciting. I'm excited.
Yeah, but as far as the new Song of Fire agenda goes, I think Lannister's probably the best house to have the best house to take advantage of its benefit.
Oh, yeah, they can hit that draw cap the easiest for sure.
Yeah.
You know what else strikes me as kind of interesting coming in this set, though not in this pack, but coming in this set that could combo very nicely with Toman, Sir Aerys Okkart.
Oh, yeah, more stand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, every time one of your Kingsguard comes out of Shadows. So that gives me a fun little Nedley idea, or at least a Nedley scenario in my head of all these Kingsguard bouncing in and out of Shadows, protecting innocent little Toman so he can dig into the deck.
Keep drawing you some cards.
Yeah. So, When two people mirror match each other with Summer, that they're both going to get their draw capped increased, right?
Yeah, so both draw capped increased by two.
Yeah, that's that. The mirror match just sounds fun.
And there's one thing Daryl Lloyd loves doing, it's drawing cards.
Yeah, oh my god, I love it so much. Even if all those cards are garbage and you can't play them.
Yeah, he just loves to draw.
Oh man, it's so fun.
Yeah, I heard a rumor once, a draw equals win.
Well,
I don't know where I heard that.
Quite a rumor.
I think I'm proof that that's not the case. Not. I'm just playing possum.
Yeah.
Draw does equal win.
Daryl, I don't know if you know what that saying means.
I think it means draw equals win for everyone but Daryl Lloyd.
Yeah.
You know what else? Now that you got me thinking about Song of Fire more, you know what else works nicely with Toman?
What's that?
I'm sure when Song of Fire was spoiled, we mentioned Val before,
mm-hmm.
but much like the cash, it's some nice any phase draw that you could use Toman, rearrange your deck so that
to be able to hit your Val triggers absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can trigger Val, and you can trigger Val more times because of the increased draw cap on Song of Fire.
Mm-hmm.
So that really appeals to me.
Does it appeal to you?
Yeah. As long as I can remember, you know, how I've planned things out past that immediate marshalling phase.
Which you won't be able to.
Yeah, no.
There's not a chance.
I will definitely wind up forgetting. We'll be halfway through challenges and I'll forget whose challenge it is.
And you'll be like, I'm going to play a card from my hand.
Yeah.
Like, well, we're not in the marshalling phase anymore? You're going to be like, no, Will, you already made challenges.
This reminds me, more than one game Daryl and I have played where we have just sat for 5 minutes plus, both staring at the table, because we'd forgotten who was going.
Yep.
I think that happens to everyone. I don't know if 5 minutes has ever happened to me. I've definitely waited for a while, thinking like, so are you going to marshal?
Yeah,
well,
the worst part is, it might
No, you were not exaggerating. Seriously. It was like 5 minutes. Sometimes when Will and I are in a pretty serious game, we're pretty quiet. We're not going to talk much to the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. We're both just standing there. Like,
we didn't want to give anything away, you know?
Yeah. You didn't want to be the jerk. It's like, so are you going to play? And he's like, no, I'm thinking.
Yep.
So whose marshalling actually was it?
It actually happened a few times, so once was my fault, once it was his fault.
Yeah, we're fairly even there, thankfully.
Yeah.
Good story, guys.
Yep,
I'm glad you shared that for the listeners. I'm sure the listeners appreciated it.
Oh, they loved it. They loved it. They want more of it.
Oh, you know what else? I'm back to looking at Toman because I was going to ask if there were any other thoughts here. You know what else works gloriously with Toman?
What's that?
One of my old favorite cards, which has actually been seeing some renewed play recently, and by recently I mean, say, the last 6 months, the Heralds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Beautifully with Toman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Toman just works so great with a ton of stuff.
Yeah. I really hope there's enough summer stuff to support him.
Yeah. Super simple things like, you have two of those, you know, two gold roads or something in hand. And you're like, well, I can't play them both. Might as well put this one down here to grab something that I can play on this turn.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. Or it lets you drop anything really that you can't play at the moment back in an extra, say, a dupe of a dead character, or another limited card, like Daryl said.
Yeah, and well, I don't know. I assume you're probably thinking of this when you did bring up the Heralds, but I'm not sure. But one of like even beyond just searching out cards you'll put on top of your deck to be able to draw with Toman, mm-hmm. using Heralds just to shuffle up four if you have four bad cards on top of your deck,
yeah.
to be able to draw for more answers.
Yep,
is also
sure
pretty
enough.
Sweet use of them.
Yeah, there's always the chance that after you shuffle and then put whatever character you chose on top of the Herald, that maybe one of the other, you know, other three cards out of that four is something you need even more. So.
Mm-hmm.
He's super versatile.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm hoping there's enough to go with him. And even if there's not, I might try him anyway, just because of all the other non-summer things that can work so nicely with him.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And plus, he reminds me a lot of Sensei's Divining Top, and that's one of my favorite magic cards of all time.
It is actually really similar to that. Just a little more vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That doesn't have the built-in protection.
Yeah, you're gonna cry against Targ, basically.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Well, this week, I think we've got a pretty interesting or little follow-up to the mailbag episode last week. We reached out this week to FFG, not only to get the spoiler, but to round out the rest of our episode with FFG goodness. Now, I know folks are getting excited right now, thinking that I'm going to introduce someone on the show like Nate French or Damon Stone. Unfortunately,
but
that's
joke's
not
on
the case.
You.
Yeah, that's yeah. not the case.
We would have introduced them 30 minutes ago.
Indeed. They would have said about as much, but it would have been introduced much earlier. No, what we did was we emailed them and reached out to them and said, hey, what would you be interested in hearing us talk about on the podcast? So I thought that'd be an interesting mailbag-like approach to this.
I mean, I think it's still kind of, I mean, it's a mailbag that we requested.
Yeah, yeah. Fair enough. It was still part of the mail, I suppose.
Yes.
So, who shall we do first?
Well, I guess Nate's more my type, but I'll settle for Damon.
I mean, Daryl, we all know that Damon's your type.
It's the glasses, isn't it?
Because you're both so stylish. What are you thinking?
Well, that or the shaved head.
I don't know what we're talking about anymore.
I'm not sure either. I'm not sure I want to know.
What? Oh, God.
shall we start with Damon then, since he's alphabetically
Damon.
First? Okay.
Sure.
Now, he sent us kind of a two-part question here. He says, you know, as far as what he'd like to hear some players talk about is what they feel are the most undervalued cards or the ones that see the least play despite being useful, and alternatively, the most overvalued cards. I've already got one that I mentioned that I thought has been undervalued forever. Even if it's kind of creeping up now, I'm still going to say the Heralds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I have two cards that immediately jumped to mind whenever I read this question earlier. And one I know I mentioned to Will a couple weeks ago, and that I didn't know why I didn't see as much play, and that would be Winter is Coming.
Oh, yeah.
That raises your claim.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that used to be a huge card. I mean, it was a Stark staple for years and years.
Yeah, if you think Claim 2 is nasty, just wait until you have Claim 3.
Surprise Claim 3, yeah.
Yeah, Surprise Claim 3, yeah. Surprise Claim 2, even. Surprise Claim 1 on a Valor turn.
Oh, yeah.
Even that is potentially really brutal. They think they saved their one guy, and nope, he's gone.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I don't know why that card doesn't see more play.
Well, and you were really talking about after some of the recent Stark mm-hmm. restrictions. Well, recent, good grief, it's been like 9 months now.
Yeah, it's been a while.
But
it's
yeah.
7 months, Will.
Sorry. Math, not my strong suit.
It is not.
But anyway, like you were saying with, whatchamacallit, restricted now. Now,
No Quarter, Mira, Bear Island.
No Quarter was the one that you
No Quarter specific, yes.
Because you were talking about, knights and murder decks and stuff, and how Winter is Coming is actually a really nice fit to slot in there.
Yep, it works in as the murder, but it also has more uses because you can use it for other challenges.
Yeah, that's a great thing. A lot of those decks can be built to follow up with a lot of intrigue to strip people's hands out.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you a great option if you've already pretty well killed off stuff on the board. Gives you a great way to strip out their hand or grab that less power you need to win the game.
Yeah, absolutely. If your opponent's already, if your deck's already doing its job and you've killed all their characters, then that No Quarter in your hand is not going to do you any good.
Mm-hmm.
But a Winter's Coming in your hand, as long as you have more challenges you can make, is always going to be useful.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's one of the cards. I'll let Daryl go I'll let both of you go again before I go.
Well, sure. we'll let Daryl go next.
Well, one for me is a card that doesn't really have a ton of support coming out of the deck type it would need to be in, but I've always been a huge fan of Shadowstalker. Unfortunately for it, it is a 4-cost ally.
Yeah.
Which is just the biggest taboo of all time. Just don't play it. Don't get near it. Don't sniff it. just being able to choose and kill a character, I think, is just huge. Just whoever you want after you win a challenge. Yep. It has to attack alone. But still, I really like that card. And it's got
stealth, though, right?
It does.
Yeah. So it has some help
in
winning that.
And unlike Pyat Pri, it is not claim replacement, so it's an addition. But sometimes claim replacement can be good. But still, you will get... you'll still get your regular claim and get to choose and kill someone. Problems, 4-cost ally, and it has to be Winter. And Barrow Winter, not such a hot deck. Unfortunately, doesn't have a lot going for it yet.
Yeah. Barrow Winter aggro specifically, because there have been some pretty popular Barrow Winter decks with the wall that are more defensive in nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Will remembers, but literally the second deck I ever built was a Barrow Winter deck based around Shadowstalker.
Oh, nice.
I did not remember that, no. Mm-hmm. I knew that there had been some floating around in our meta a couple times. I think I remember, didn't Paul do one for a while?
I did one. I did a...
Darryl played Neutral Winter for a while.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was a lot. That was like two years ago. This was the second deck I ever played.
Now to bring that back to mind, because he was all excited about... Shadowstalkers and Marauders in the same deck, which does still sound, appealing.
Appealing like bananas?
I thought Daryl would chime in about that thought, but I guess not.
What thought? I'm sorry.
Marauders, Wintertime Marauders, and the Shadowstalkers.
Yeah, I've done that. Deck. Yeah, I did that. It was amazing. It was a lot of fun. Unfortunately, Neutral, not such a hot deck, but maybe there can be hope now that neutral long voyage only. I don't know, run some winter tech. Having those guys in the same deck is really awesome. It's expensive, or you have to use one of your plots to roll alliance, which sucks balls, but it's a lot of fun, at least for as far as casual play goes. It's a blast. God, look at me. Casual play?
Yeah.
What the hell does
what
that?
What a joke. You disgust me. Get off my podcast.
Yeah.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Your podcast.
It's my podcast, Will.
Yeah, it's kind of his
very
podcast.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I've got another one.
Okay.
That you mentioned Winter is Coming actually brought to mind.
Oh, you're going to take mine, I bet.
What's that? Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
Let's see.
I'm going to throw a shout out to Crown of Winter.
Ooh, wasn't going to be mine.
Yeah. Positive attachments, definitely seeing more play still after the 10-link restriction. And the Crown of Winter is definitely one of the most positive of positive attachments.
It is pretty strong. But it also is, and as well as far as being one of the best positive attachments? It's also 2-cost.
Yes. It's a little on the expensive side. As far as attachments go, it is unique, and it must go on a unique character, all of which are kind of bummers. Sorry,
unique,
and it's a unique start.
Unique start character,
yes.
I think, right?
Does it have setup?
No.
It does not.
No.
But that unique character will then get +2 strength and be wearing a unique attachment, which makes it impervious to a great deal of burn, and it's immune to opponent's events and character abilities, which also makes it impervious to... pretty much all of the rest of burn and a million other effects.
Yeah.
It is very frustrating to opponents.
And it makes it winter.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And it's winter suckers.
Which is not to be neglected at all, though I think the protection has been the bigger factor.
Even though
the deck I am playing it in does want it to be winter for a handful of effects, the protection's definitely been more important in the games I've played.
Absolutely. All right, well, the only other one that I thought of immediately is another Stark card. That's another Stark event. That's another Stark event at the core set.
Oh, okay. I know it.
I'm talking
Lethal
Counterattack.
Hell yeah.
You're talking what?
Lethal Counterattack.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Another card that I don't think, in the past 3 years, I don't think I've ever had one played against me.
Really? No, I've played it in the last 3 years.
I can't remember the last time I've seen it either. The last time I saw it was back when I was playing the Stonewall deck, and that's been a year and a half to two, I think.
Yeah. It has been a while since I played it, but I managed to wipe Greg's board with it once. It was really awesome. He was just like, what the shit?
Living the dream.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome. Yeah, that's a great card, especially with a lot of the dragon decks out there and stuff. And they're just like, no, Miltirth, everybody. Okay, that's fine. Okay. It'd be really cool.
Kill them all, use and, your you saves, know, and I Valor next turn.
And then there's those Northern Cavalry flanks everybody's playing. I mean, there's, you know, it can see some play now. But it's still tough to get into those, to squeeze into those Stark decks right now. But
yeah, and that's a fairly expensive cost, having to nail two Stark dudes.
Yeah.
It is not the cheapest event in the world. But boy howdy, can it kill a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, Daryl, any other specifically undervalued cards that you can think of?
I'm drawing a blank right now.
That's fine. It's okay. Yeah. It's okay to draw a blank sometimes.
I was talking to Greg recently about Shadowstalker, and another thing that came up while I was looking through Barrow Wintertech was Burning Sword, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Burning Sword.
That's a really rad effect. The character is immune to card effects, so
yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can afford to Valor on your turn, and it's fine. So, you know, pretty neat. I mean, they do have Lightbringer, I guess, for that, but, you know, it's non-unique, so you can have multiples of them out, but again, it's two costs. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I, you know, I thought that was a really neat card.
Mm-hmm.
Undervalued? Nah, probably not, but I feel like it should still see a little more play, but,
oh well. I mean, I'm sure if Bear Winter was an actual legitimate deck, it might, like, actually probably not. It probably still wouldn't see any play. Once I got to thinking about it. It is just...
What about Fish Whiskers? He never sees play.
Dude, I played him in that deck over the weekend.
Dude, I played Fish Whiskers. Yeah. I played Fish Whiskers.
Oh, okay. I'm the only one who doesn't play Fish Whiskers.
Dude, there's got to be a Fish Whiskers in. There's got to be a Fish Whiskers in the deck you played at the regional.
I don't know if I had the chapter pack at that time.
Oh, actually. Did you not? I probably tried to put one in at least.
Yeah, you did.
It's your fault for not having the card.
Tried and failed.
You're right.
Yeah, Fish Whiskers, if you're playing Warships, he is solid.
Yeah.
Even a mini if you're not playing Warships, I still remember a couple of years back, Casey Galvin was running it in a deck with no Warships, so that he always had a Nelt Greyjoy character.
Yeah, trigger for to be a Kraken.
Yeah. Which seemed like just the most brilliant thing ever at the time. I mean, it's still pretty brilliant.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to throw out one more. Okay. This is one that I propped pretty heavily after the deck that I played at our regional, and I still stand by it. That's going to be Sunstroke.
Mm-hmm.
You'll notice I've got an attachment theme here for some reason, but Sunstroke is very much on the opposite side of things, a very powerful negative attachment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that character is going goodbye one way or another. And it's a good way to knock out some real problem characters for Martell in particular, but even for Targ, too. Like, say, Baylor Blacktide.
Or the Red Viper.
Yep.
Ooh.
Either or.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, Sunstroke is definitely solid. And you're right, I don't see why I didn't see more play.
Exactly, man.
Just gotta lose. Don't you have to lose by four or more now?
Well, it's got two effects. It straight up says the attached character cannot be saved, which gives you some nice options, especially against Greyjoy with people like Baylor, where you can actually flip a Valor and kill an important character. And then it has the response where if you lose a challenge by four or more, then that character gets killed.
But it's minus four strength.
Yes, sorry, that character is minus four strength and killed if its strength is zero.
So it kills a lot of things.
Which will kill most things that you're looking for. But the nice thing is, it's after you lose that challenge by four or more at all. Attack or
defense. Not attack, not, it doesn't have to be attack or defense. Yeah. It can be either.
which makes it a lot trickier for the opponent to plan around, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did just think of one that only one person I know in our meta plays this card, and it pisses me off every time, which would be A Lannister Pays His Debts.
Joe? That
piece of shit card. It's really good. Like, you can really knock out a problem character.
Right up there with lethal counterattack, man.
Just by losing some chud in a military challenge where you're Lannister, you're going to lose, like, every military challenge. Yeah, so that should see more play.
Out of all the cards we talked about so far this evening, that's the one that I have seen the most in a resurgence. Like, there were a couple of regional decks that I know were playing it, so I have seen a couple, although you are right. It doesn't see as much play as it probably should. But it does have some pretty stiff competition in the Lannister event slots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was pretty good for undervalued cards. Now, is there anything in mind for actually overvalued cards? Because I have one that I'm probably going to get a lot of flack for.
Overvalued is so tough. Maybe I'll think of something after hearing your choice.
Because the one that I'm thinking of, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, but the card Nightmares. It is versatile. But I've been playing it in a lot of my decks recently, but it's never been in a place that's like, this card just won me the game. It's always like, it helped a little bit, but I would prefer it to have been X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's never been completely game-breaking. And the amount of decks that I see Nightmares in, I feel like a lot of people feel like it probably is that game-breaking, because every single competitive deck I see has at least two or three copies, at least two, usually three copies of Nightmares in it.
I mean, it can be a really, like you said, versatile, really good utility card. But there are times where you draw it and it's like, it doesn't fucking matter what I do. Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter if I blank this two influence providing location. He's got like six influence on the board. So this doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And this character is immune to events, but sometimes, it can really come in handy, blanking a Maester Aemon or, blanking
it can be useful. It can be useful is the best I can say about it. Because there have been a lot of times where I've drawn, it's like, well, it's not going to do me any, it's not going to do anything for me that I wasn't already going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm going to get a lot of hate for that one. People love Nightmares.
Oh, they really do. Well, I think I've got one as well that did come to me after you brought that up. So, plan worked. I'm going to go with the Viper's Bannerman. I mean, it's a good card, don't get me wrong, and it can generate a lot of card advantage, but it's not a cheap card. You are still paying a pretty penny for it, unless you do drop it in with, manning the city walls.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot, I've heard people kind of grumbling about that sort of thing lately, but that's by no means a guarantee that you hit on that. I mean, we played, a couple games the other day, week and a half ago or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And you didn't manage to hit on that at all. You wound up, if I remember it, you had to use the manning on the little no agenda army, like turn three or something, because you still hadn't seen a Bannerman.
Yep.
And so, I don't know. Maybe it's more that combination I feel is a little overrated, but I think the Bannerman is the part that people gripe about more than the plot.
Yeah. I think you're crazy. The Bannerman are incredible. You are paying a pretty penny, but you're paying 7 gold for a 7-strength Vicon that's stealth and deadly that's also going to get you 4 cards.
Well, it's also locking out some really great other restricted cards and stuff. I mean, there's some trade-offs. It's still a good card. It's still worthy of being restricted, but I think it may be a little overvalued.
It can definitely be a double-edged sword when you don't have enough to cast that guy, which not a lot of Martell decks are going to have enough just to get that guy out there early game. You're going to have to drop him in manning. So I see where you're coming from. Tough for me to agree with you, but I won't disagree with you. I don't know. I can't really think of a card right now that I think is just brutally overvalued.
Really? Shall I fill in? I've got one that
Go ahead. I'll think about mine.
I just looked at it here because I was flipping through some cards to kind of see what else might be overvalued. And you know what? I really think that without his beard is overvalued.
It is really
seriously
overvalued.
Yeah. Oh, it actually has negative value, people. Negative.
If you give it even zero value, you are overvaluing it.
Yes.
I actually have one more legitimate overvalued card, Will Lentz. And that's going to be the Black Sails Agenda.
Hmm.
I just feel like it's too with the environment turning back towards some more control, even the aggro decks are playing control in it now. In the post TLV world, I just feel like the Black Sail Agenda is just too easy to control your naval characters.
Yeah,
it is certainly a possibility. I saw a little snippet of some stuff in the Skype chat about that recently from Karma, who's one of the players over in Tulsa. Now, I could be misinterpreting because I only caught part of the chat because I'm only on like every other day and so I miss some messages and stuff. But if I'm understanding it right, I think Damon has ruled that you can both not count your cards whenever you split your deck and you can only cut once in order to try and make those equal piles. So.
Well, in that case, that sucks.
Yeah, to me personally, it's not a huge deal. It's just kind of annoying, like, why does it matter that much sort of thing? Because most players, I've seen, generally then still shuffle a deck after splitting them. But, I don't know. Another little ding for the players that are worried about that.
Hmm. I think that's a stupid ruling. If that is how it is.
Listeners, be sure to correct me if you have heard more directly about that ruling than I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, the Black Sails Agenda, I think, is pretty overvalued. I'm not a fan of it really at all. Did all that help you out? Have you come up with anything?
No, I couldn't think of anything.
That's fine, bro.
You know, honestly, I don't really see anything too overvalued right now in the game for me personally. Maybe that's because I value everything high. Every card's awesome.
You do. Actually.
I really do like to see the bright side of too many cards. I really do. So.
Okay.
Damn, I could have sworn I could have thought of one, but for some reason, I just can't think of one.
I forgive you.
You know, I don't know. Maybe the things that are overvalued right now, like I've seen a fair amount of those seven cost armies that you reduce them, you know, by three if your opponent's running an agenda.
The fleets.
You know, which is just going to make those character agendas a lot better. I don't ever run those fleets unless I'm running a Black Sails agenda, but
still. I just never run those fleets.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Especially the bear one. It's a mercenary.
Yeah, potentially really painful right there.
Yeah.
But,
all right, moving on to Nate's question.
Indeed.
William, what's Nate's question?
All right, well, Nate asks, what are the traits and characteristics of a good player? What can someone do to improve as a player apart from monkeying with decks, thinking about cards, and playing games? And I'm going to lead off real quick and say, in response to Nate's second question, that one really made me for a little bit, because those would have been my like top three answers.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I do have one thing that may not be in the spirit of Nate's question, but when he says playing games, I assume he specifically means playing a Game of Thrones, the LCG.
You know, he probably does. That's a good
thing. So one thing that I think helps, and I think it's part of the reason why I'm the Game of Thrones player that I am, is because I have played so many other competitive card games.
Yeah.
And, I've been trying to teach Alicia, my wife, how to play, you know, a couple card games here and there, and she always gets discouraged about even, like, brand new ones we pick up and that neither of us have ever played before. I'm usually just a lot better than she is. And I keep on trying to get her to understand that pretty much all card games end up being effectively the same in the end. Like, there's different rules, and cards will interact differently depending on what game you're playing, but the base mechanics of card games are all fairly similar.
Yeah, like, I feel I could pick up about any new card game and, you know, relatively accurately evaluate the power level of, you know, most of the cards in, say, a brand new LCG core set or something. Yeah. Now, I may miss a combo or two.
Yeah, and I'm not saying I'll be the best player at a new game I pick up, but if any new game that I pick up, I'll be competent at to begin with.
Yeah. And
I can say that with pretty surely.
The core concepts, definitely always the same, you know, card advantage and efficiency and such. Mm-hmm. But also, even, I think, you mentioned that the rules, of course, will be different between some of them. I actually do think playing some of those other games, even closely related games, shall we say, like other Eric Lang designed LCGs, mm-hmm. I personally feel that playing games of those other ones will help across the board too, just because they force you into that different way of thinking for a little bit about these different rules and these different situations that, you know, sometimes can be a little enlightening when you go back to play this other game. You're like, oh, wait, this connects to, you know, this sort of way of looking at X, Y, or Z.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the things that makes a good player, or at least what makes a great player great, at least in the Game of Thrones, is the way they choose their plot deck. And, you know, the plot deck will, it can make or break a deck. You can see a whole, you know, 180-degree difference in a deck with the right plot deck, or the wrong one.
Yeah, totally. Oh. I mean, look at that example when we were playing last week, and you forgot a plot deck. So yeah. I loaned you the one from my Targ deck.
Yeah.
Didn't work out so well?
Yeah.
No. I mean, we knew it wouldn't be great. But, I mean, it's a good example where we both had Targ decks.
Were they both Knights of the Hollow Hill?
No, mine was, yours was?
Maesters.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I mean, right there's already a difference that's kind of hard to jive between the two. So I just think it, you know, drives that point home pretty well.
Yeah. And I did end up changing that deck and played some games with Greg, and it performed very well. Nice. Anywho, so to go along with that, picking the right plot deck, obviously we play with Greg a lot. And one thing that Greg told me one day whenever I was having a terrible day in gaming, so we call that Tuesdays.
Yeah, no, just also Wednesdays.
Every
days
day.
And
yeah, days that end with Y. But he was like, here, Daryl, why don't you try this if you're having trouble figuring out the right decks? We're going to play. Obviously, we're playing for fun. So just go ahead, and every time we flip a plot, you just pick whatever plot you feel would be best in this scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we'll just play like that. You know, he's like, you know, kind of maybe an unfair advantage, whatever. But after we play so many games, we play like four or five games, and you find the plot that comes up the most. Like, hey, man, this would come in handy the most. And that's how you'll make your plot deck for this deck. And it works. And so one thing that's going to separate a really good player from maybe not so great players, just the open-mindedness to try something like that, and to better yourself, and maybe, you know, sometimes you have to do it in a goofy way, but
I mean, I've actually done that exact thing, just goldfishing against myself. I'll just have two decks, and I'll sit down. I won't have plot decks at all, but I'll still draw it out, and I'll just go through and figure out my plot deck by doing that.
Yeah. You know, related to that, that gives me a thought of another characteristic that I think is fairly important. And this one may sound surprising, but I'm going to go with memory.
Mm-hmm. The downfall of Daryl?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not just remembering your own stuff. I was more thinking remembering the card pool, because what sparked that thought is Daryl talking about, you know, picking any plot at all, right? But who's going to sit there and flip through every plot on Card Game DB or every plot in their collection before setting one down? No, you think of whatever you can remember would be useful in that situation, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the flip side is if I'm sitting down at a table in a tournament, say Worlds coming up here, against another player, I need to be sitting there and thinking not only which out of my seven available plots is the most beneficial to me for this turn. But also, on the opponent's side, what plot out of all of them available in the game is most beneficial for them this turn, and plan accordingly to what they're most likely to reveal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, just having a knowledge. It's beyond just the knowledge of the card pool. It's applying the knowledge of a card pool for your opponent against your deck.
Right, yeah. Really being able to apply it to the situation at hand.
Which I guess it's kind of similar to something that I'm pretty notorious for, because I always assume the opponent has every single answer, and so I'll, like, preemptively begin, like, killing a character after something happens, because I'm like, you have the no quarter. Mm. I'll be like, oh, you don't have it? Oh, well, awesome, then I win the game.
Yeah, yeah. Not always the case. Like, it's a weird tightrope. You have to assume the worst without acting it out, if that makes sense, right? Like, plan for those contingencies, but, like Zyler said, don't go ahead and grab a character before they've actually, you know, played the event or whatever to kill it.
Yeah.
Because that's giving away info, they may not really have it, you know, just, it'll mess up some decisions.
Yeah.
And you always have to call their bluff, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If you're playing the We Take Westeros deck, and you just made a 47 strength power challenge, and they're playing, you know, Martell, you go ahead and play the We Take Westeros, whether or not they've got the he calls it thinking, you have to call that bluff.
Yeah.
Yeah. But another way to make yourself a better player is not just to play games, but just do anything that's going to exercise your brain. Obviously, games can be huge with that, but hell, man, sometimes I even watch some documentaries. Seriously, I'll educate myself a little bit. Anything to keep your mind going. Reading, like me, like I've been reading H.P. Lovecraft. That homie's vocabulary is redunk. So anything that's gonna make your brain, you know, be like, okay, oh my god, I saw this word like two chapters ago. Now that never happens in a Lovecraft book. It's always just one 13-letter word that meant the same thing as the last time he used it, you know. But, you know, anything to keep your memory rolling and whatnot. So, like we said, memory for me is a huge downfall. And so anything to improve my memory will help me, especially when it comes near tournament time. And so I definitely try to exercise my brain for any tournament that I'm really taking seriously.
It's funny you mentioned reading Lovecraft there, because, of course, you know, there's also the Call of Cthulhu LCG, which several of us have been playing more of lately.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also reading some of that stuff, like the Cthulhu novels or the Game of Thrones novels, actually has a bit of a connection there as far as just helping make those mental connections to remember all that stuff, you know? If you've read the novel and you know in the context of the novels who Meryn Trant and Preston Greenfield and Jamie Lannister are, and what their, you know, traits are in the novels and stuff, you know, that lets you kind of connect to the Nedley aspect of the cards and just anything to make those extra mental connections makes it easier.
Yeah.
So you heard it here first. Reading the novels will make you a better player.
I mean, you're definitely not wrong. Like, even today at work, I remember why I was fairly thinking about Thrones when I should have been, you know, helping people with credit cards and such. Yeah. You know, working. But I was thinking about, I mean, it was just like a split second, like Infamy for some reason. And then how I get to that is I always think Infamy, infamous Jamie Corset, Jamie Lannister. Like, his Infamy doesn't do anything, but Jamie Lannister is arguably the most infamous person in the entire series.
Exactly.
So that whenever I'm thinking about Infamy, it always stems from that.
Sure.
Yeah. You're not wrong, Will. You might be overvaluing it, but you're not wrong.
I think reading the novels is undervalued.
Oh.
So, any other specific traits or characteristics of a good player? Back to the initial question.
I'm going to go for, and it's easy to describe basically, but it's hard to actually get like specifically into, and that's being able to read and understand the metagame as a whole. So part of that comes from, you know, keeping up with, you know, this deck winning this tournament, this X deck is winning Y tournament, this is really popular, this is a counter to that, it's weak against this. Being able to accurately and well predict things is a pretty characteristic for a strong player, which is part of why John Bruno is the player that he is, because he is very, very good at accurately predicting what's going to be popular and then figuring out what's going to beat that, but also not lose to other decks that might beat that popular deck.
Yep. I don't know.
Just that anticipation, that's strategic planning, you know, the tactical play is very important, but if you've got that game plan together for the next two turns down the line, that really, really makes a difference. And I'm sure that's the sort of thing, Nate is well known as having been a pretty phenomenal player when he was able to play freely, and he's a big chess buff. And I mean, that's what chess is all about.
Yeah.
Actually, just planning two turns in a row is pretty short-sighted from what I gather in chess, but I'm not really a chess buff.
You and me both, brother. The horsey moves like an L.
Yes.
Yes, it does.
I do kind of want to play chess, too. Brief aside there, it gives you six different armies to choose from.
Yeah, I was going to say, and for listeners that may not understand, chess the number two, not necessarily chess as well.
Yes, sorry about that.
I didn't know there was a chess, too.
There is.
Mm-hmm. You can look it up over on Board Game Geek. If I remember right, there's a link to the rules for it. The company put it up as like a free PDF.
I'll check it out. But I also think another trait of the good player is that he's not afraid to experiment, and that does go hand in hand with looking at the meta, knowing what's good, and at the same time making a deck that's still not garbage against the rogue deck that might show up, you know.
So, yeah, don't be afraid to try that goofy stuff, because if you just follow the, you know, everybody thinks this is good, everybody knows, in quotes here, this is good, yeah, then you're going to miss that moving target. You're just going to be part of the crowd that somebody else slips along and reads better.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts before we bring this topic to a close?
You know, I'm pretty good there. Like I said, Nate ruling out actually playing games, monkeying with decks, and thinking about cards nailed a bunch of my problem, or bunch of my thoughts there, which is a problem. The only other one I can think of, and this is actually a surprisingly important one to have this late in here, be familiar with the FAQ.
Yeah.
know those timing rules at least, you know, I'd say 85% of the way, which is probably as good as I know them. and do try to be current on rulings and those frequently asked questions so that you're not surprised by a situation in the game.
So, Daryl, how does a game of Savas work?
I have no idea. You both kneel, two knelt characters with intrigue icons, and nobody wins.
Yes.
Just nobody wins the game, but game's a draw.
Yeah. Nobody actually wins. You both die a little inside, I believe is how the card is played.
That's the exact wording on the card.
Yes.
Both you and your opponent die a little inside.
they that might actually that be the flavor text.
Props and slops.
I've got a prop to throw out here real quick.
Let's hear it.
This is to Mr. David Stromies, who I met at Gen Con, and unfortunately he did reiterate that as fun as it would be, his name is actually just pronounced Stromes.
It's Stromies.
Yeah.
Stromies sounds right. He should have a sandwich named after him.
Oh, he should.
Stromies. Yeah.
See, I think like it gives me an image of like a Greek hero, Stromies, you know,
really?
Slayer of Leviathan or something.
I don't know. Sounds to me like a bowling team or something. The Stromies.
So it ends with the E's, like Hercules.
Yeah. Okay. Stromies.
but anyway,
Stromies on rye.
props to Dave. Not only was it pretty entertaining to meet him in person at Gen Con and get to chat with him for a little bit, but it looks like the New York City meta is putting together a Thrones tournament in October that they were hoping to get a prop on the show, maybe get a few listeners in that are not directly in that area and already aware. So they are planning Thronestoberfest on October 12th in Manhattan. They're looking for some RSVPs, so he asked for me to give a shout-out. He didn't, unfortunately, include a link to anything, but he mentions the boards, so I believe they've probably posted it on the boards.
I know they posted it on CardGameDB as well as the main Thrones boards.
Okay. See, I never go back to the main Thrones boards, so I can miss out on that.
I hear they're better
now. I say main. Have they picked up? I don't know.
They're a little better. I bounce to them once I've read everything else on the internet for the day and I'm bored at work.
Gotcha.
All right, then.
I have a slop.
Okay.
I know it's kind of in vogue nowadays to be slopping FFG, but on the plus side, they did announce the next Star Wars cycle.
Yeah, and it looked like they changed the packaging. Did that
That's
weird?
My slop.
Really?
They changed it to the actual, like, plastic shell, slice your hand open, just open the cards packaging, which I absolutely hate.
I really kind of wondered about that. I wonder, is it just to make it easier to hang on store shelves? Because it's got to be more expensive to produce that kind of packaging.
What do you mean they changed the packaging?
So for Star Wars right now, and it may go to all the other card games eventually, but they no longer have just the cardboard boxes. It's like if I buy like an Xbox controller and it comes in the plastic shell packaging, basically that.
Yeah, the stuff that you have to get like a butcher's knife after.
Oh, God, I hate that.
That's what
shit.
It looks like.
That's got to be way cheaper. Case. That's got to be way cheaper, right?
That does?
I think so.
I mean, if FFG is doing it, it probably is cheaper, honestly.
Maybe. I mean, I'm not up to date with my stocks.
My thought is that it's actually better for big box stores, probably, to curb theft-related issues. Is just a guess, completely a guess. But possible. If you look at stuff sold in big box stores, it is way more common for it to be in that kind of packaging. Even if you go somewhere like Target or something and look at game cards, like, say, Magic, they'll be in special packaging.
Yeah, and Magic
similar.
They are, yeah, the blisters.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if that means FFG is working out some kind of deal to get some of their games, especially ones with high recognition like Star Wars, into big box stores.
Yeah, I haven't thought of that as possible. I was not a fan of that. Yeah. And it just makes it look a little cheaper, honestly.
It kind of does, and it's just going to be a real pain to you know, I like to just pop it open there in the game store and take a look. If I've got to go find a chainsaw to get this sucker open, ugh.
Yeah, and it also is, I don't want to say concerning, but that is the same packaging they use for like all their print-on-demand stuff, and so I don't know if there's going to be a connection there.
Oh, shit, Disney's pulling rank.
Well, I did hear secondhand that they announced at the in-flight report that they bought print-on-demand hardware.
Yes. Yes, they have done that. So, on the one hand, again, it is probably going to be a little cheaper for FFG if that's the case, but also the print-on-demand stuff is not as high as quality. See pretty much all the, like, League kit promos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The quality isn't there as compared to the good old-fashioned printing. But that's my slop.
Nice.
Well, there you have it.
Darrell?
Golly, why does everyone call me that now?
I've been Darrell for years.
Maybe you have. Maybe you have. Everyone at work started doing it recently. I don't think I have anything. Oh, yeah. I do. I have a huge prop to the game Outlast. It's a PC survival horror game that I've been playing. Been meeting up with some buddies to play on Monday nights, where it's just I'm playing and four other grown men are watching me, and we are screaming like little girls because we are frightened. It is a very, very good game. You're an investigator who goes to, like, obviously an insane asylum that has been closed for, you know, like 50 years or something, that has just opened up mysteriously. And you go to investigate with your camera. It's very like Blair Witch Project-esque. You know, you have like night vision. You have to find batteries to power your camera for night vision. And it's just super scary. I don't want to spoil anything. If we have any computer gamers out there that would pick it up, it's terrifying. So, Outlast. It's a PC game. Give it a shot.
Cool.
Yeah, it's good.
William?
You know, my gaming is taking a decidedly retro turn lately. I came into, I think I mentioned, that pretty decent deal on a newer Xbox and a bunch of games. So I've been working on the first Borderlands.
Oh, nice.
Solid.
Yeah. It got kind of boring for a little while there in the early levels. Like, the first, like, three or four levels, it was fun. But then I kind of hit this, like, I don't know, dearth of content for a few more levels. And I wasn't really liking the prospect of just having to grind some levels before I could get some more content. But I did it anyway, and once I got up to around 10, then now things seem to have smoothed out a lot more, and I have many quests available. So
many quests.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Well, heck, I'm going to have a gaming-related slop that I literally just read on the internets.
Oh,
apparently, there's a very good possibility that Atlus, makers of my favorite of all time, Persona, there's my favorite series of all time, the Persona series, may be being bought out by Sega.
Really?
Oh, dude, the comeback of Sega.
I'm okay with
or
that.
Or the downfall of Atlus.
What are you talking
one
about?
One or the other.
Sega is a great company.
Yeah,
I can only hope that is their first move toward re-entering the console market. I can only hope. Crickets.
Yeah, I don't know if that's gonna happen, dude. I love the Dreamcast as much as the next guy.
They never will, but a man can hope. A man can hope. I'm a huge Sega fanboy.
I am not.
I don't blame you.
Wait, which one of us?
either one of you guys.
Well, I'm going to continue to be positive then. And I'm going to throw a prop out. Now, normally I'm on Kickstarter a little bit more, browsing stuff. So I usually see junk there. But I caught a link to this elsewhere, and it sent me over to Indiegogo, which, anybody's not familiar with it, similar concept to Kickstarter, but generally gets done for more artsy stuff than, like, physical products. And there's a group over there trying to do a Dark Knight fan film, and entitled Dark Knight Legacy, which is going to pick up the story after John Blake takes over.
Hmm.
As Nightwing in this, and they've got a pretty sweet little trailer up and everything. They've got a goal of 30,000. 29 days left. They're at almost 10,800. So I think there's a good chance by the end of that 30 days they're going to hit it. So I'll be excited to see the whole thing.
Yeah. Cool.
I haven't seen what they put up, but I have seen that it exists.
Mm-hmm. You should check it out. Everything looks pretty high quality. And, like, as far as characters go, they've got a little blurb here about the cast. They've got guys Nightwing, Red Hood, Stephanie Brown. I'm not sure who Romeo Sionis is.
You mean possibly Roman Sionis, Black Mask?
This is Romeo, it says. Oh, here we go. Now that I'm reading more closely the entry, I accidentally skipped over it. He is Roman's son.
Okay.
There we go. And Oswald Cobblepot.
Is that the Mad Hatter?
No. That's the Penguin.
Same guy. No?
Not exactly.
Damn.
Good try, though.
Anyone else have anything else?
Yeah. Wait, did I prop Smash up last week?
I don't recall.
Damn it.
I don't remember if you did.
Well, okay. Well, just in case I didn't, I did recently procure Smash up by means of monies.
How complicated.
As well as the expansion, which I have not opened yet. Smash Up is a super fun little self-contained card game. I'm not sure what the player max is. Probably like 6 people could play it. But you basically, you can have pirates and you pick 2 factions, and there's, you know, a plethora of factions. And then you shuffle them together. So you can have like ninjas and pirates. So you can have pirate ninjas or robots and, wizards. So you can have robot wizards. And, you try to control a base and score that base. And, all the characters have like come into play effects, and there's sweet synergy between factions, and cross factions can do some neat stuff. Like when you get the zombies rolling with the ninjas who are jumping in out of play, and the zombies have recursion elements. And, it's a really fun, just a casual game. So I recently brought that to my friend's house, who we've been playing Outlast at, and none of those guys are card game or board gamers, and they thought that game was a blast. So if you have not tried it, I strongly recommend it.
I would definitely like to try it with you here sometime soon.
Yeah, that's fun. We gotta get some peeps together to try it.
Yeah, I saw that FAU and Rob playing that a couple weeks ago, and it did look like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Now, does anyone have anything else?
I'm good.
Good.
Well, thank you for listening to another fine episode of Two Champs, One Chump. If you have any questions, comments, or sex Will and Daryl fan fiction you want to let us know about,
wow,
you can hit us up on Facebook, Two Champs, One Chump. Email, you can hit us up at twochampsonechump@gmail.com. We're on Twitter at Two Champs, One Chump. Will occasionally checks Google Plus, I guess.
Yes.
Still do that as thing. Well.
But if, again, anything and everything, always let us know. We are always very happy to hear any of your thoughts.
Indeed we are.
So we will see you again next week, same time, same place. As I believe, I'm going to give a little spoiler, it's a current plan for us to have a running segment for the next several weeks leading up to Worlds. So hopefully we can get that off the ground next week. I think you guys are going to like a lot.
I'll say I've reached out to the first person we need to make this segment happen and got a yes. So I think we're on the right track.
Fantastic. We'll be looking forward to that, and we will see you next time.
Danger Zone!